Emily Sandy, fantastic. Brighter Days is out now. Emily will be releasing a new album, as she's told us, later in the year. And now releasing a new guest, we have Annie McManus.
So, Richard Strange, I think it would be easier to list the things you haven't done rather than what you have done, because it really is remarkable in kind of researching a bit about your life and career so far, just the breadth of artistic endeavours on your CV and also the level of success you've achieved in those, from fronting the seminal band Doctors of Madness, the forerunners of the punk scene in the late 70s, to founding the iconic club cabaret Futura in the 80s, to acting under Tim Burton in Batman or Scorsese in Gangs of New York. That's just a few of the acting accolades. You're a teacher, fittingly lecturing in creativity at Tile Yard in London. And your most recent project is a play called When You Awake, You Will Remember Nothing. You've never written a play before.
No, it seemed about time. I got a call from a friend of mine who I'd done some lecturing for in Portugal, an artist and a professor and an academic called Antonio Olau. And Antonio said, look, would you like to try and do some sort of collaboration? And I said, well, I've had this idea of a two-handed knocking around for two or three years. I know very little about it except the title, When You Awake, You Remember Nothing, the opening scene and the closing scene. And then I said, and there's a missing child in it. All right. And to my horror, he came back and said, the Portuguese Arts Council have offered to fund this. So now we've got to write that middle missing hour and bit.
That's the first time you've written a play. So how did you find the process of that?
I've been in many plays, and obviously I'm a theatre fan, so I sort of know the mechanics of live theatre. Yeah. I also tend towards the more fringy avant-garde or multimedia aspects of theatre. Yeah. So I thought I'd like it to have film. I'd like it to have a soundtrack that goes throughout. I knew I wanted to try and place it in a mythical Spanish Andalusian village. And I knew that it was about persecution. But then I found out, and this is the great thing sometimes, this sounds so pretentious, but sometimes when you are writing something or when you're in something, you discover what it's about sometime after you've actually put it to paper.
Yeah.
And I realized that this was about our ability to recreate our lives, to change our luck, if you like. It's a very existential piece in many ways. It's about making choices and looking at our lives and saying, actually, I could get a better life than this. I can do better.
It's such a multi-layered process in terms of how you tell your story. There's, as you say, there's hypnosis, there's sound collage, there's dreams, there's original poetry that came up with the original song. I was so curious watching it, you know, how do you assign which parts of the story to which type of multimedia layer?
It's a question quite often as of trial and error. And I wanted it to be this very sensory experience where, of course, you've got sound and you've got vision, but in theatre, you very rarely get smell. And so this idea of introducing that sense into a performance, which you can do in a small theatre like the Courtyard, where we're doing it in London, it's just big enough. You know, if you put your cooker on at the right time, you can get it just à point by the time you need people to be enveloped by the whole exoticism of it.
You can encourage sales at the interval for food.
At the end, I did leave with a hunger.
A lot of people were very, very hungry at the end. Yeah.
So you mentioned the idea of looking back after writing the play and realising that it was about reinvention. And, you know, they say you write to know yourself.
Yeah.
You are kind of the epitome of that in your career and how you are unafraid to embrace change. When did you realise that? When did you start thinking, well, I can do this, I can reinvent myself?
I think I realised quite early, so about 1977, 78, I am a failed rock god. I saw lots of my friends become real rock gods, and I thought, I'm not quite that, but I've learned a lot from being in rock and roll, in popular music. And I went off from being in Doctors of Madness. I wrote a political fantasy, what they used to call a rock opera, called The Phenomenal Rise of Richard Strange. Mm. And then, almost by mistake, someone said, oh, you're an actor. You should come and meet a director called Frank Rodham, who'd just done a film called Quadrophenia. And Frank was doing a film, and he looked at me, and Frank's about 5'4". He'll hate me for this, but He said, "Wow, how tall are you?" And I thought, "He's 5'4", and he's doing a film about Frankenstein." So I said, "I'm 6'9", Frank." You know, he said, "Oh, that's a shame, because I'm looking for someone to play someone quivering with fear in front of the monster." But he said, "Go and meet this friend of mine. She's a casting director." That was in 1984, I think. Michelle Braidman took me on. Then I got Batman, and I got Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and Mona Lisa, and Gangs of New York, and Harry Potter. I think I was the last British actor ever to be chosen to play in Harry Potter. You know, they'd used everyone else.
Yeah.
And they said, "We better give the old boy a line or two."
Is there a common thread that unites everything you do in terms of process?
Yeah, I think it's, don't be afraid of this myth of failure. It's only through failure that you push the thing on.
Do you think that the kind of fate of Doctors of Madness the first time around in the 70s, that kind of initial lack of commercial success has been beneficial to you in that way?
Well, it has, because I used to work on German TV on a popular family show, and every week guests came from all over the world, and sometimes it was the Spice Girls or the Bee Gees or something. But in 1991 or something, in walked Peter Sarstedt, and I thought, I know what this guy is going to sing. Yeah. And he's been singing it for 40 years. And if I'd had that one hit, that could have been me. And I wouldn't have worked with Jack Nicholson and Martin Scorsese and Yuri Lubimov and Robert Wilson and Tom Waits and Marianne Faithfull. You know, I wouldn't have done it, because I could just have eked out a living from that one hit, like so many of them do. So it's a blessing. And when I say I'm a failed rock star, I don't say that with any false modesty. I am, because I've never filled Wembley by myself.
Were you just not punk enough for the punk scene?
Well, the thing was, we were punk before punk.
The Guardian called you prophecies of punk.
They said, yeah, they said we were the missing link between David Bowie and the Sex Pistols. I'll take that on my grave. That's all right for me.
That's an email auto-signature right there. Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
When You Awake, You Will Remember Nothing is at the Courtyard Theatre, London, until 6th of February.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Annie McManus and Richard Strange. Music now from Soft Lad, the performing name of the multi